Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Now, I mentioned earlier in the week that privacy campaigners in Ireland have expressed concerns about what the government is saying about the public services card. In particular, they say the government's plan to require all citizens applying for a passport or driver's licence to first have a public services card, and that this amounted to the introduction of a national ID card by stealth. Well, this is something we might be concerned about, but has this sort of thing happened in other countries? My next guest is a celebrated journalist and author and has written about national ID cards in his book, The Abolition of Liberty and Elsewhere. On the line now to tell us more, we have the Mail on Sunday's columnist Peter Hitchens. Peter, you're very welcome to the show.
Morning. Pleasure to be with you.
Oh, thanks for being with us. Well, first of all, are you familiar with what the Irish government is planning and what do you think of it?
Not in detail, no. Your summary is pretty much all I know. I think that the introduction of state identity cards, state identity documents, is generally done these days on the basis that it will make life simpler and it will be a consumer benefit for the holder of the card. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's what its purpose is, and it certainly doesn't necessarily mean that's what the eventual outcome is, and I advise people to be extremely cautious of these things, because once they become general, they become effectively compulsory. Already in Britain, although we fought off successfully an attempt to introduce an identity card some years ago, it's becoming increasingly difficult, for instance, to register in a hotel without producing some form of identity, which my forebears would regard as a gross intrusion into their privacy and a demand they simply weren't prepared to meet. I've had long arguments with hotels saying they have no legal power or right to demand this of me, and eventually they give in, but most people quite possibly do. I think that the difficulty really at the back of all this is that once a state-issued identity document becomes absolutely essential for daily life, the relationship between the state and the citizen is permanently altered. As far as I'm concerned, the state should be beneath our feet, not over our heads, and it should have to identify itself to us rather than the other way around.
I mean, should we be surprised by this, this kind of movement of the Irish government? It seems that it's becoming more the case that the rights that you have are granted from on high. They're not inherent in living in a country.
Well, this is the problem. Irish law has its origins in English law,
yeah.
And I think that's a great good fortune for Ireland, because English law is based on the view that you're free to do what you like, provided it's lawful, and that your freedom is absolute, and the government has to legislate specifically to limit freedom and require things of you. The identity card is common in the sort of country where that is not and has never been the case, where there was never any Magna Carta or habeas corpus, and where liberty is not a tradition, and in which all freedoms are gifts to the citizen from the state and can be withdrawn at any time. And this is the direction towards which we're all tending at the moment, often, I regret to say, under the pretext of fighting terrorism, which it doesn't, or the pretext of fighting crime, which modern governments are increasingly bad at doing.
I've known from reading your work, you're probably not very happy about the sight in newspapers of, in the UK right now, people walking around with massive automatic rifles patrolling the streets and the military on the streets.
Well, it's grotesque. It's like living in a Latin American banana republic. It's completely useless. I can't think of any purpose that it serves at all. But it is part of the constant propaganda by modern states to try and make us more and more dependent on them, which people increasingly seem inclined to accept. It's very interesting. The spirit seems to have gone out of the English-speaking peoples in the past century or so. If you read debates in the House of Commons about, for instance, attempts to introduce gun control in Britain before the First World War, they're all thrown out with enormous vigor. In fact, the gun laws of the United Kingdom before 1920 made Texas look effeminate. If you read the Sherlock Holmes stories, you'll note that Holmes and Watson often go out armed, perfectly legally, because the general view was that law-abiding persons were entitled, if they wished to carry weapons. It was something that they were expected to be able to do responsibly, and there was virtually no gun crime in the Britain of that period, so that argument was accepted. almost immediately after the First World War, the mood changes completely and people become very, very willing to accept state restrictions on their behaviour on very, very thin pretexts.
Mm. What about the argument, though? I mean, I'm just trying to think about the counter-argument here, that with the digital world, that one has to accept that one's data must be centralised by...
Why does one have to accept it?
Hmm. Well,
I just have to tell me what, in all your experience of government bureaucracy or any large bureaucracy, do you find the fact that your data is centralised helpful, or do you find that they generally lose it, don't know who you are, won't answer the phone, pay no attention to you? The efficiency of these bodies does not increase because they're more centralised. Deal with any of them, and you find this offhand unwillingness to do you any favours at all. All it means is that if they want to make trouble for you, they've got the power to do so. It's none of the business of the state where I live or what I do with my time. And I absolutely object to the idea that some person in a baseball cap can come up to me in the street and demand my papers and ask me to show who my papers say that they are. There's another thing about this. I can absolutely promise you that serious terrorists and serious criminals will have the best and most perfect and completely unimpeachable identity documents that anybody has in anywhere. They always do. They always have ways of doing so, usually by infiltrating the state, the state machine which issues these things. But it's not at all going to deter crime or deter dishonesty. The fraud, for instance, in benefit systems is not generally done by people pretending to be somebody else. It doesn't even work on that basis. All the arguments for it are extraordinarily feeble. What is actually being said is, as I say, the state wants to reverse the proper relationship between the individual and the government so that the government is above our heads rather than under our feet. And once that happens, then you can say goodbye to being free in any realistic term.
Mm. Why do you think it is that people are willing? I spoke to a doctor recently. He said people are willing to take drugs from people on the street, but they won't take them from a doctor. And people are willing to give all their information to a company like Facebook so easily and share all parts of their lives with them. Why do you think people are willing to do it?
It's often naive. I don't quite know what sort of person takes drugs from somebody on the street and won't take them from a doctor. That seems to me to be a different problem altogether. But there is an extraordinary naivety and willing to be told what to do. Whenever I go through an airport, which is less and less these days because I find it so infuriating, I'm seething inwardly at being treated as one is in airports, like a convicted criminal. But I'm surrounded at all times by people who seem to take it as perfectly normal that they're being asked to empty their pockets, take their shoes off, take their belts off so their trousers hang down, expose themselves to machines which scan their private parts so that people they've never met can look at their willies on screens. I mean, unbelievable what we have to go through just to get on an airplane. When the simplest knowledge of the sort of people who are actually terrorists would tell you that 99.999% of people who go through this humiliating procedure are not even remotely likely to commit terrorist acts, and almost all terrorism at airports is in any case done not by the travellers but by the staff. So it's nonsensical, but people undergo it without protest and without complaint. I think the spirit of liberty is what's going. People don't find it outrageous anymore. There's a wonderful book written by H.H. Munro, who wrote under the name Saki, a lot of very clever short stories, but also a book called When William Came, in which he imagined what Britain would have been like if the Germans had invaded in about 1911. And one of the principal differences that he notes over and over again to the fury of the hero is the huge amount of extra bureaucracy that everybody has to undergo all the time. You can't walk on the grass in Hyde Park. If you do, you're subject to an on-the-spot fine. There's no necessity of a court case because the Bill of Rights has been abolished. If you go and stay in somebody's house, they have to fill in a form and send it to the police to say that you're there. All this kind of thing, which, of course, is increasingly like modern-day Britain, but which he found infuriating and intrusive, and which, the British people of that period found infuriating. I think it's probably mainly the result of the two world wars in which we got far too used to being regimented and bossed about, and we never quite returned to our previous spirit.
Mm. Do you think that there's going to be an end to this? Is there going to be a way of stopping the bureaucrats from taking more and more powers away from ordinary people?
I fear not. I hope so, but I fear not. I think one of the things that now, to say, I think if you were to ask an awful lot of people after this horrible murder in Manchester whether they approve of there being troops on the streets, they'd probably say yes. I think this is the way in which people can be manipulated. The response to horror is to say something must be done, and if someone comes along with a really stupid idea and says this is something, then that something is what is done. And the willingness of people to accept it is, alas, great. It's partly a problem simply of education. People no longer know of their heritage of liberty. It's as if people had you inherited on becoming adult a very large fortune, but nobody told you about it. People simply do not know how valuable the principles of liberty in English and Irish law are, and that they have inherited them, and that they have a duty to hand them on undamaged to those who come after them. And so they rot and rust and disappear. And it's very dispiriting. We were able to combat the identity card attempt the last time, but they always come back. It never stops. There's a unit somewhere in the Home Office which I think tries to make every Home Secretary do it, and most Home Secretaries until quite recently just told them to go away. But round about the middle 80s, people began to start to buy this sort of thing, and we've suffered as a result of this same mood, the serious reduction of the right of silence. A very, very grave attack on jury trial through majority verdicts and a number of other measures. The abolition of the very important protection against double jeopardy. All kinds of other things, always on waves of emotion rather than on reasoned argument. Mm. And this is how it will come. On some wave of emotion, there'll be another horrible terrorist attack, and at that point the government will introduce 6-month detention without trial and identity cards and who knows what else. And people will say, oh yes, right, we're safer now, but they won't be.
No, it doesn't sound like there will be. Listen, one last question. Do you think that our perhaps lack of willingness or understanding in these areas makes us want to put more faith in politicians than they deserve?
Oh, yes. It's part of the death of religious faith. People who once upon a time attributed all power and goodness in God now try and attribute it to politicians and the state. Alas, they don't live up to this. To this expectation.
How could they?
The idea that there's some great big father figure there in Leinster House or in Westminster who will keep us all safe and who we can trust with everything. It's very common, and yet if you look at brilliant documents such as the United States Bill of Rights and indeed our own Bill of Rights of 1689. They contain an absolute assumption that people in power cannot be trusted, that they will always try to abuse that power, and that measures have to be in place to prevent them from doing it. This is the basis of limited government, the basis of freedom, and those countries which have remained free have sustained and enforced and defended these provisions. The problem at the moment is that nobody knows what they are, nobody cares about them, and when they're attacked, usually by a salami slicing method, people do not stand up and defend them.
Well, it's very good to get your perspective on these things, Peter. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for asking.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.